From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fifth day of September 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at a complicated but very wet forecast. And, oh, the Canadian prairies got really cold. Frozen even last night. We'll hear more about that from him. And then along the way, we'll hear from University of Illinois agricultural economist and commodity market specialist Todd Hubbs about marketing crops over the scale this fall. Doesn't sound like exactly what you might want to do, but it may be one of the best options. We'll hear more about that as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world from WILL.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day. Hey, thanks, Jackie, for being with us. We've been starting with those support and resistance levels, and boy, they seem to be getting more important the closer we get to the harvest time. What do they tell us today?
Well, first support in September on corn is at 352, then 337. Major support would be down at 305. When you look at resistance, I mean, it's kind of disheartening. Every week it seems like it's going down, getting lower instead of higher. 360, 370, and then I'm going to leave the gap in there at 398 and three quarters to $4. December, we've got support at that 360 level. We keep on flirting with that. 350, and then major is at 323. Resistance, 370, 380, and then there's still a gap up there at 410 to 410.5. I'm debating on whether I should just skip that for now, but let's just say we hope maybe it'll happen. September beans, 816.5, 750, and then 722. Resistance, 912, 941, and 970. And then when we get to November beans, you've got first support at 826.25, then 790, and then 737. And unfortunately, first resistance is at 860, then 885, and then 925. So a whole lot different than 1006 is what it used to be. But, you know, that's just the trend in the market at the moment. It's the time of year, too.
It's always important to keep track of where the money is placing its bet this week. Has it changed at all?
Yeah, and the last few weeks have really been changing a lot. So when you look at the managed money right now, they're long 56,000 of the red winter wheat. They were 58,000 long last week, so they really didn't change a whole lot there. But their lots of soy meal that they're long went from 47 last week to 27 this week. So they were getting rid of their long positions. They're now short 33,000 in corn versus 28,000 last week. So they extended the corn. They're short 43,000 in beans versus 75,000 last week. So, you know, they're really shifting around a great deal. And their net short on soy oil is 83,000. That was 96,000 last week. So, you know, it looks to me like we've got a lot of spread unwinding and spread changing. And that's pretty normal for this time of year. You know, they look at the crop that they think is going to be the strongest or maybe has the best demand, and then they start to move their money around to try and position themselves for that.
On that note, we're wrapping up the last marketing year, which ends this month, in fact, and we'll get those numbers from USDA at the end of the month. A really good tally, in fact, on the soybeans. However, I'm wondering, as we look into the new marketing year, do we have a good idea what export inspections might look like?
Well, we're still wrapping up on those too. We'll get the last group of inspections actually came through this week. So we'll start the new ones next week first. We do have a lot of sales in terms of for next year, but no inspections, of course, for next year at this point in time. I think the number looks really good for this year's USDA goal. We're going to be short, but they were saying we were going to go up 5% on corn. I think we were ahead like 1 or 1.5%. Beans look like they're going to end it down probably about 3%, and that is right where the USDA was at. And so, you know, this is always a strange kind of time of year because of ending the crop year last Friday. Now any sales that still are on the books will be moved into this coming year. And so that usually gives the person a really, you know, you look at the export sales and they're just gigantic, you know, and it's because of the fact that they're moving some of the old sales left over from last year yet into this year's. And so we'll see once what that comes out on Friday. I looked at one of the things I wanted to talk about was corn use for ethanol. I just saw some information on it. July, we used 481.3 million bushels of corn for ethanol compared to 454.8 last year. So that's a bright spot for, you know, for us and for corn at this stage of the game.
The other thing that's happening this month, of course, as it does every month, is we'll have more USDA reports. We talked about the end of the year report. That's the quarterly grain stocks number. It'll be the last one for the year at the end of the year. But we have a couple other reports, more than a couple, that are be due out very soon. The FSA numbers are coming out. And, of course, the crop production and WASDE figures for the month of September. What do you see in those?
Well, in the when you looked at the August FSA numbers, of course, you know, we're building the reporting on everything. You know, we did have a certain amount of close to 1 million acres of prevent plant or failed plant on corn at this stage, and I think it was 85.7 million acres of true planted. So I expect that we're probably going to continue to see those types of things show up. We really don't get the end of the year crop numbers until January, and so by then, everything's taken care of. But so we'll continue to get these FSA reports now we started in August. Now we'll get September's, we'll get November's, and then we'll get December's yet. In December, by between November and December, there usually isn't a lot of change. But I looked at it compared to a year ago as far as percentage-wise, and it's pretty close to the same. In other words, the same guys that report early always report early. The same guys that take a longer period of time appear to take a longer period of time. We don't have any estimates out for the U.S. supply and demand other than to say that there's a lot of talk about they think that corn production may go down. I'm not quite sure what that's how they're coming up with that, other than to say, you know, we've had some pretty major flooding in some areas, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily going to show up on this report, but we'll see. Expecting beans to go higher production-wise, and that's primarily because we've seen such dramatic changes in the last 4 weeks in topsoil and subsoil moisture, and we've had some pretty darn good sunshine, you know, and that's basically what makes the bean crop all the way around. So I think that we have to look forward to this thing to basically give us just a little bit better idea of what's happening. It's nice that the FSA numbers are coming out ahead of the USDA report, because they used to come out after, and that always made it really difficult for the trade to decide how to handle anything. So I'm glad that they've got their ducks in a row. I have some information too, Todd. Occasionally we've talked about this in the past, but when you look at the change on the day of the report and then 2 weeks after the report, it's extremely interesting. This September report basically has the number one ranking of the most likely to occur and the biggest changes, and that's unfortunately both negative on beans and corn at 67%. And so when you had a change on corn, basically it hasn't been huge. We've been down 6 cents or we've been up 8 cents. 2 weeks later, we've either been down 15 cents or, excuse me, up 15 cents or down 24 cents. So you can see that it just depends upon how we come out, I think, on the beginning of the report. When you look at beans, basically down 13 or up 16, excuse me, I'm sorry, I don't do this often, but up 24 or down 13. But 2 weeks later, up 35 or down 56. So, you know, the pendulum definitely swings according to where harvest is at this particular time of year and what's going on. So it'd be interesting to see how it all turns out.
Have you checked in on our South American friends recently?
Oh, yeah, what a mess. We'll start with Brazil. You know, this freight rate situation that we've been talking about is just wreaking havoc down there. Now they're saying there's going to be no decision about it until November. And on top of that, they may make the rates higher than they are right now. Now, Petrobras, you know, which is a government-owned refinery, which basically provides fuel for everybody in the country, raised their diesel prices, you know, and truckers didn't think that that was necessarily going to happen. So we've got guys in the Supreme Court right now petitioning to see if it's constitutional for the Brazilian president, you know, to sign this minimum freight law, and that they're not going to decide until, guess what, after the presidential election in October and November. The only thing, when you talk about the presidential election, I did see was, remember I was telling you that Lula, who used to be the old president who's in prison,
right,
was leading the polls. They've now come out and said he can't run. I'm sorry, I just had a laugh. It's just funny. The scary thing is, all of this is, you've got some of these truckers unions down there that are calling for another strike. You know, and that country hasn't recovered poultry-wise or, you know, anything since the last strike. So they're saying transportation costs are up 12% in the normal sector, ag sector up 20 to 40%, some places as high as 100%. So some of them are calling for a strike on September 9th. I guess we'll see. It's not nearly as many as they had the last time, but the reality is that diesel's back to where it was price-wise before the strike. Now, we talked about Roundup being banned down there. They did get that switched, and basically it was overturned on appeal, but it doesn't mean that they're not going to ban Roundup. They just said you can't just come out here and just ban it overnight. So they put off that decision now until we get to the first quarter of 2019, because they said they need more information. And I know that you traveled. I wouldn't recommend going to Argentina anytime soon. Last Thursday, now hold on to your hat. Last Thursday, their prime rate was raised by 15%. It is now 60% for prime rate. And they have a 30% inflation rate. Now the peso, you know, which is their currency, plunged 20%. And just like in 2001, I mean, we saw this happen 17 years ago. They're going after the farmers, because we have to remember, grain is priced in U.S. dollars. And so a plunge in the peso actually makes the value of the grain that a farmer has higher. And so the government is well aware of that. So they came back in here and they said, we're going to revamp this export tax. You know, now, if you remember, they were lowering the tax on beans at about a half a percent a month, and that was supposed to go on all the way through 2019. No decline is going to happen anymore. They stopped that. So they said that now just, you have to listen to this, because this is interesting. Their current export bean tax is 25.5%, so they lowered that to 18%. Meal and oil is 23%. They lowered that to 18%. Now, on the face, that sounds pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would have thought so too until you read the next paragraph. Now there's going to be a new tax of 4 pesos per U.S. dollar value of any goods, which means at the current exchange rate, they're going to be adding 10.5% to beans, which takes it up to 28.5%. In other words, they've gone up 3% over where it was before, and three pesos per dollar on meal and oil, which is going to take that up to 25.8%, and it was 23% before. So, you know, they're trying to sell this as if this is something really great. Corn and wheat also are going to be taxed at 10.5%. They had zero on their export taxes for that. So this whole thing at the moment, they say, is going to remain in place till 2020. And this was interesting. The president and the economic minister, this is truly political, their comments were almost identical to 17 years ago to justify these export taxes. They say to the farmer, share your profits with the less fortunate. So this is their alternative, you know, rather than cleaning up the mismanagement of this government. They just want to take it from the guys who are working their butts off and hand it to someone else. So, you know, it's very scary all the way around. I think that I have some clients that are married to people from down there, and one of them's dad had $20,000 equivalent in his checking account. And if you remember, in 2001, the government just came and took all the money,
mm-hmm.
you know, out of the banks. And they said, well, don't worry, you'll get it all back in 5 years. And in 5 years, he got $5,000 back out of his $20,000. So, you know, I hope and pray that they can get themselves straightened out, but I wouldn't count on it anytime soon. I'm glad we live where we live.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Now let's turn our attention to marketing the crop with Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Todd, thanks for being with us. It looks like it'll be a tough marketing year for farmers, especially for soybeans.
Well, it's a really tough marketing year for soybeans. There's no doubt about it. It seems like every week more bad news comes into the marketplace, from African swine fever in a Chinese hog herd to massive yields all over the Corn Belt. So we've seen a lot of pressure on soybean price. I mean, here in Illinois, spot prices are well below 8 in a lot of places. Even with 82.5 cents, that still puts us below $9 for a cash price on beans. And moving into the new marketing year, unless we see some kind of resolution with the trade issues we currently have with China, I expect us to do decent trade numbers, but nothing like we normally do when we're exporting to China. So I think if we have a big yield number in soybeans, which all points are looking that direction, and we could be looking at a ending stocks number when USDA comes out near 900 million bushels, which would be a record for the 18-19 marketing year. So when you're thinking about marketing soybeans moving forward, it's this really tough decision. It comes down to, do you think there's going to be a resolution in trade in the next year? Do you have the space to even store soybeans? Because it looks like the corn crop could be a pretty good one. I'm not a big fan of commercial storage in either crop, really. But at these prices, it's brutal. I hope some people put in at 10, 10:30 when we saw those prices in. But now it's just a lot of damage limitation. Hopefully you get a good yield and you can market some of those soybeans, you know, right across the scale. But you're looking at really low prices. If you want to store beans or carry out to January with some beans, I think one of the hopeful scenarios is we have some kind of weather issue in South America. We tend to get a rally in December, January sometimes on weather problems in Argentina and Brazil like we did last year. That's not really a marketing strategy, though. That's more of a hope. It's a tough year, and I understand if guys want to sell them right across the scale. If you're going to store them, I would hope you would have room on farm to store it. I don't think commercial storage is probably going to pay itself out unless we see some kind of change in the trade scenario.
Yes.
So, I mean, when we're looking forward to marketing soybeans out of this 18 crop, it's brutal. Do you want to just cut your losses and get out now? It seems like the yield's going to continue to build if that's the way it's going nationally in a lot of ways. So we could be, if we do a record yield number on top of, we've had strong crush, we've had decent exports, but, you know, will we see that kind of pace continue as we move through 18-19 marketing year? I'd like to think so. But to get that kind of movement in exports, we will need these low prices, in my opinion, for it to continue. So if you're thinking about storing soybeans, I would definitely put a strategy in place and pick some prices that you would be comfortable pulling the trigger on and getting out from under them. You know, looking way forward, you know, if we see some kind of rally in 18-19 beans, you know, if you're thinking about the 19 crop, depending on how much you're going to plant, there's so many variables in place this year for both soybeans and corn. You know, what kind of acreage will we see next year? But I'm a big believer in early marketing of crops for the next marketing year this year. As far as corn's concerned, I still am optimistic about corn. I think its price has been carried lower by the problems we've seen in the soybean market. I still feel like there's space to run. I personally don't believe the USDA yield number is correct. I think it might be a little bit lower than that based on a lot of the reports I've seen and what we've seen with weather recently and some of the yields coming out of people harvesting early. So I think there's some room to run in corn. I think if you got space and a plan in place to store corn, it could pay off in the 18-19 marketing year. But I would keep in mind, if soybean prices are still depressed moving into the planting season next year, we could see a really big corn acreage number, which would sort of hang over 19 in the second half of the marketing year prices as we move forward. So it's a tough scenario on both crops. I'm optimistic on corn, And I just wish we would get some positive news on soybeans at some time in the near future.
That's Todd Hubbs. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Hey, thanks so much for being with us, Todd. When we come back, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. On this Wednesday afternoon here in the Closing Market Report, we're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, I know that you watch the Canadian weather really closely, and I'm told, but I didn't realize this, that they got really cold last night. What happened?
They did. A very strong surface high pressure center settled across the eastern half of the prairies and dropped temperatures down to, in general, 27 to 32 degrees. But we are still picking up various bits of information from some of the producers up there. And just recently, we were told there was some 20 to 23 degree readings in a small part of east central Saskatchewan. And so the word is that a lot of these crops were ahead of themselves a bit, so damage is not expected to be widespread, real serious, but there are definitely some corn and soybeans and some flax, maybe a little bit of canola that's probably going to end up with quality losses if nothing else. I don't think most of the area had temperatures low enough to actually cause production losses, but you know, quality changes are certainly expected.
I know that my daughter drove through Wisconsin yesterday, and we hadn't realized that they had been drenched quite as hard as they had been. A lot of water there. More to come, I take it, across the northern part of the Midwest.
Yeah, actually, the remnants of Tropical Storm Gordon will see to it that the lower Midwest actually ends up with the greatest amount of additional rain as we go forward through the weekend. Gordon is still working its way through Mississippi and has certainly had an impact on western Alabama in the last 24 hours. As we go forward through the day today and tomorrow, the storm will cross the middle parts of the Delta and then turn around in Arkansas and head towards the lower Midwest. And so over the weekend, we're probably going to see 2 to 6 and some local 8-inch amounts of rain occurring across many areas from Missouri into Ohio and Kentucky. And it's going to be a kind of a big mess. We've already had some flooding from Nebraska through Iowa into Wisconsin and into western Michigan, including parts of northern Illinois and Missouri. So a big part of the Midwest has got a lot of moisture, or will by the end of the weekend, and we'll definitely need to dry down.
Is there a specific geographic path that you can identify that it'll follow yet, or is it still up in the air?
Yeah, I think the center of the storm will probably go from central portions of Arkansas up across the Ozarks of Missouri, and then will turn into the interior southern portions of Illinois, and then move from there into central and northeastern Ohio. That'll be the band of greatest rainfall. And I think most of this will begin on Friday in the Midwest. Of course, the Delta will be wet here today and tomorrow.
Other places around the planet we should check in on, for instance, Europe, Ukraine, Russia have suffered some pretty serious drought over the recent months.
Yeah, you know, we've got quite a few pockets out there that are still no good. Parts of France, Germany, Poland are still running drier than normal. One of the biggest areas of concern right now in Europe and in Western Asia is in Ukraine and parts of southern Russia. Really from the middle and lower Volga River basin area all the way down to the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, it's been dry for weeks and temperatures are very warm. There's no moisture there. They couldn't plant a wheat crop if they wanted to right now. And late season soybeans and sugar beets really took it on the chin. And there is some rainfall in the forecast now for parts of Ukraine as we go forward through this next, let's say, 5 or 6 days. It's light rain, but it will accumulate over multiple days. Maybe some 1 to 2 inches will occur in some spots. But that middle and lower Volga River basin area of Russia is just not going to get a break at all until we get out towards mid-month, and then maybe it'll start raining. Australia still has some serious issues as well. We have seen some rain move through eastern Australia here recently. They are in their second year of a serious drought. The relief that's occurred here recently may be helping a little bit of the wheat and canola as it gets ready to reproduce, but it's really too little too late. And the big worry, of course, is El Nino. When it comes back, eastern Australia is going to go bone dry once again. So there's a lot of worry about what happens down the road in that part of the world. And we're also a little dry in China's Yellow River Basin area, where it hasn't rained for a good 10 days to 2 weeks, and the ground is becoming more and more dry there, and there's no hope for rain for them for at least another 7 days either.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.